Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
So Patrick, tell me, what else have you been doing during the lockdown?
Well, a lot of yard work for sure, Jim.
Oh yeah, well, that's a good way to spend your time. Just remember one important thing, though.
What's that?
Feed the tree. Okay, Patrick, so sometimes we interview big stars, right?
Yeah.
Huge stars, right?
That's right.
And I think we just had that experience recently when we interviewed Tanya Donnelly.
Yeah, totally.
Such a big star that we have to, you know, grant this interview a second day, don't you think?
Yeah, totally worthwhile. I think if you're like me, even though I was part of the original interview, once the first half ends, you do want to hear more right away, so...
So this was fun. We interviewed Tanya Donnelly over Zoom from her home in Massachusetts and in the suburbs of Boston. She mentioned the suburbs there.
That's right.
She has a new album coming out August 14th. It's called Tanya Donnelly and the Parkington Sisters, and it's an all covers album. Some really cool stuff. I mean, there's like Echo and the Bunnymen song, Linda Ronstadt song,
There's a Go-Go song you can hear right now, which is the first track from the record to be released, Automatic. It's kind of a deep cut, so check that out.
There's a Paul McCartney song, I think. So there's a lot of cool stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you'll be able to hear that in, where are we here? A couple of months.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you can check out Tanya's Bandcamp page, where she has some cool other covers that she's just sort of like working on in the moment with some other people. So that's cool to check out too. And then also in this portion of the interview, we go a little bit back and talk about, you know, Belly, and we talk about Throwing Muses and stuff like that too. So great interview, great time. She was very generous with her time. And
she really was.
Answered all of our dumb questions. So there you go. Well, let's not put this off any longer. Let's get to part two of this interview with Tanya Donnelly. You mentioned you like to collaborate, and then, you know, Patrick was mentioning the idea of floating between bands is not something you see so much in rock music, but you obviously have always, at least earlier in your career, always gravitated toward bands. I mean, you were in three bands, well-known bands, before you started a solo career, right? So there must be something that really appeals to you about that band dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's something to be said for both, because, you know, there, I did go through a stage of feeling like, feeling very much the opposite, where, you know, I wanted to be in control and I wanted to make the decisions and I wanted to, but even then, even my solo albums are in spirit very collaborative, because I like what I, you know, I choose people that I trust, for one thing, and also I've been really, really lucky to have the musicians who I've played with on hand and willing and just kind of have fallen into place with me. So even the solo stuff ends up being a collaboration.
So. Getting back to the album with the Parkington Sisters, were there any of these cover songs that really intimidated you?
Oh, God, yes. Devil You Know.
I long to see the other side of things, hung on the cliff in search of something. Who knows
for a couple of reasons, because it is a labyrinth of a song. And because Neil Finn is one of my favorite singers. And, you know, that's, I mean, all of these people are my, clearly some, everyone we covered, Ronstadt, for instance, you know, these are off the charts, stellar artists. But he is, his voice is just, he just has one of those effortless, running up, you know, several octaves seemingly with ease. So that's that one I was nervous about. And, you know, it's funny because like the ones that I thought, like Days, I thought Days was going to be, oh, I got that one. I know that song Inside Out from, you know, Kirsty and the Kinks. I know that one. That's the only one. No. There are two songs that we are all singing live at the same time. And Days and the Mary Margaret O'Hara song. Because I just felt like I need you around me to sing this. I don't think I can hit the notes unless you're with me. And as soon as we all, I think we did that in like two takes, and it was all I needed was to have the sisters singing with me.
So. Interesting, yeah. Are you apprehensive, Tanya, about the release of the record since, you know, it doesn't appear you'll be able to tour behind it and do sort of the normal, you know, stuff? Now you're talking to C-Level Podcasts about promoting it instead. Maybe that's the answer.
No, not at all. No. Quit it. No, that's not that. We were going to keep this. This was not going to be a big touring thing anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, the plan was to, you know, maybe like a tight Eastern Seaboard.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone works. There are kids. There are, you know, Sarah's about to have a baby in a few matter of weeks.
Wow.
We never really had a plan to do a big, huge push behind, you know, as far as touring goes.
Okay.
You know, we're still going to play shows. We did have some things lined up for this summer, which we have to obviously postpone.
Yeah.
But it's another thing that's nice is that we're kind of all on the same page as far as how far afield we are able to go right now. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that I think that must make for a nice collaboration right off the bat, right? If you've got a similar kind of situation in that sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So since our show is called Rockin' the Suburbs, I got to ask you a couple of suburban family questions here. A
couple of bourbon questions.
No. Yeah. So I read that your daughters, who are teenagers now, never got to see you play.
My oldest daughter is 21.
Actually. Oh, 21. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
So,
I got one of those.
So, yeah. So I read that they didn't really get to see you play with a band until you did that Belly reunion a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah. When my oldest was, she toured with us up until she started school. So she might not remember a lot of that.
Yeah.
But she was, you know, she went on the road with us. They had never... They've both seen me in various incarnations, and they've spent a lot of time in clubs and backstage. And, but that was the first, the Belly reunion was the first, sort of, you know, big theater experience that they had. And it was very exciting for them. And they also are, you know, I think they wanted to see that happen too. And, you know, Chris Gorman, the drummer, has kids, and his kids really wanted to see it. And I'm not going to pretend that that didn't play into Chris and I, part of our investment in doing it. So yeah, that was really exciting. I mean, there was, I was definitely, you know, in London, the London show, and in 2016, the first one, having them there for that, there was part of my focus was just kind of on the side of the stage with them the whole time, sort of seeing through their eyes.
And, yeah. Did that make you self-conscious at all?
Yeah, because I actually do care what, you know, they, their perspective is very important to me on all levels. So yes.
Okay. Sort of like, you know, mom, the rock star, how does that come off? Right.
So, right.
Yeah. But then I read that they, you know, after a little while, maybe they sort of got used to the,
oh God.
The
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's yeah. I think, you know, it's my young, there was one, she's going to not enjoy this, me telling the story, but there was one night when we got, you know, we came off and we had played this, we were feeling really good and it had gone really well and everything, you know, just all of everything lined up and it was a great show. And I came backstage and she was lying, first of all, lying on, you know, a filthy couch. and she just stood up and just said, "Can we go?" It's just like, classic. We're just going to play an encore and then we'll go.
One song only.
Yes, exactly.
That's really funny.
That's hilarious. What, and what was that like for you to be on a, you know, a big, you know, a proper tour again?
Our Belly V2, the entire thing was DIY. You know, we did everything front to back on our own from scratch. And which meant that on the road, I was doing the tour managing and accounting. Tom was actually helping me with accounting as well. Chris did all of the merch and the merch sales. Gail was in charge of all graphics and all, you know, of all of the stage stuff, you know, the graphics on stage. And we just all kind of split everything up, and it happened to fall into areas that complement each other. So it was great. It was perfect, really, because we were, you know, we got to have a really holistic experience, I would say, just of, you know, just being blown away by the excitement and happiness that we inspired. The shows were just a love fest, you know, and the room was just, it makes me teary to think about, because it was just such a wonderful thing. But then we'd get off stage and I'd be immediately in the office working the, you know, figuring out the books and settling up, and Chris would be settling merch and Gail would be organizing the packing up, and Tom, you know, we all had like a very utilitarian job to do, which was really nice because it just sort of meant that we, there's no time to get fussy about anything. And it was perfect. It was great.
Oh, wow.
So,
you really had something special. You really have something special, I guess, with Belly. I will tell you that I really liked the new album that you did. I thought you found that magic again. And
that's nice.
And I'll also
thank
tell you.
You
that last night, my wife and I, was our wedding anniversary, and we were we were sitting outside on our back deck, because, you know, you can't go anywhere, and we're sitting outside late into the night and having some drinks, and I was telling her that this interview was coming up, and I said, let's put on that first Belly album. And, you know, my wife's not like a hyper music fan, but when we were listening to it, she was like, I remember that song. I remember that song. I remember that song. It was like, yeah, you know,
that's
they're
so nice.
They're so the melodies that you write are just so memorable and catchy and you know, really stick with you over however many years it's been. I've lost track, but
a lot.
But anyway, but I don't know where I'm going. I don't know where
you
I'm
don't
going
have to
with
be going
exactly,
anywhere with it.
But but I just think I guess I wonder a little bit, like, was there something about that time in your life or something about the 90s or whatever where it just kind of like all these the conditions were right or things just kind of came together for you?
Yeah, conditions were right. I think that's what it is. It was just and I think that's the case for a lot of, you know, there's a web of bands that sort of all plug into that time that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, there's it's a real kind of music continuum piece because it, one thing led to another, you know, certain artists propelled other artists forward and people came together and moved apart. And it was just an interesting, kind of chaotic, you know, honestly, musically just, it's so musically diverse and interesting time. And I just don't, you know, I always stumble over this question because I'm not a sociologist or even a musicologist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this is a question almost better externally answered. So,
yeah. Mm. Well, I'll answer something. I'll give you an answer, right? So I was going to say, for Gen Xers like us, it felt like the 90s was like our decade. You know, the 80s, there was some cool stuff going on, but it still was very, you know, in the mainstream, very boomer centric. And then the 2000s and on, I think, became more geared toward millennials in a lot of ways. But like the 90s is that period that we have. Mm-hmm. I think that we can feel some ownership over, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, I do feel that. I do feel that as well. And I think there's a connection to, you know, my time. I invest in every year that I've made music within, you know, but there was, I mean, I feel like the 80s and the 90s, that's clearly where I cut my teeth.
Yeah.
So I do have, yeah, absolutely a connection, a deep connection to that era, to those, yeah.
Yep.
I have one kind of sort of selfish question to ask Tanya.
I can't wait.
Well, don't get me started. It's early, but I've always wondered, and I've been on a real movie kick lately because of, you know, being home and kind of holed up, and I've been really watching a lot of Wes Anderson movies and kind of getting back into those and discovering ones I haven't seen. But and you know, his work makes such an impact. But one of the things I think, you know, he's really famous for writing these or using these 60 songs, you know, at certain moments in his movies. But the incidental music, the soundtrack, the stuff composed for his films are also very key and very moving. Have you ever thought about or been approached to do any kind of soundtrack work, either for a movie or specifically? I know some of your songs have popped up here and there on, you know, different shows and things, but have you ever thought about working with a director and kind of writing that kind of music?
We have, you know, we've put out, we had a couple of things with the Belly over the years. We've had situations that this has come up several times, and we've even been in development a couple of times.
Really?
And then and then the projects that we were writing for fell through. Mm-hmm. And they own the stuff.
Oh, right.
That you've been working on.
Right.
So it just gets shelved, basically.
Yeah.
And then it's not something that I pursue, to be honest. If someone approached me, I'd be happy to vet that. But it's, yeah, that we, I was just, here's an anecdote. I was approached to write the theme song for, or to be in the offing to write this theme song for Dawson's Creek.
No, really?
When it was, when it was being developed, and I passed on. Oh. Which,
well, who knew? And I wouldn't have gotten it. On paper, you'd be like, well, I don't think this is
it. Wouldn't have happened. It was like, I don't know if I can write for a teen dramedy or teen drama. Sorry,
that's really funny. My youngest,
that should have been Paula's. That song is perfect for
My youngest daughter goes to school in Wilmington, North Carolina, where they made Dawson's Creek, and there's signs like everywhere in that town about home of Dawson's Creek. Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah,
that is funny.
Yeah, it very much is. Well, that's interesting. I've always thought the emotional soul of your music really could apply to some, you know, some scenes that are trying to be elucidated. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, that's one of those things where that's sort of like it would be lovely if that all fell, if something like that worked out. Yeah.
Well, I'll give Wes a call. I know he's got a new one done, but next time he's working on one.
You know, it's funny that you bring him up, because when I was first listening to Bless the Telephone, I felt like I have to know, back to this.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard this before, and I actually Googled Love Is Siffre and Wes Anderson to see if that's what.
Oh, that would be perfect.
This is what I feel. I sort of felt like, feels familiar. I bet it's that, and it's no.
Right, and it's so great. And you're like, how did I? Yeah, somebody must have thought or found this already. Yeah, right.
Right.
Okay. Well, so I want to ask one more thing here, if you'll indulge me this. So Patrick and I do occasional series from time to time on the podcast we call Perfect Pop. And we have either he or I or a listener or somebody we're interviewing or whatever will talk about a song that they think is just perfect. And you obviously, with the covers album, you have already indicated, I think, a lot of songs that you really like. So instead of that question to you, I want to kind of reframe it this way, which is that I have sort of a running list of songs that I'm always considering for the next time we do Perfect Pop. And one of the songs I have on the list is Not Too Soon. And so I thought, here's a great opportunity. I have the person who wrote that song.
Yeah.
So I just, wonder if you could give me a little bit of insight as to, kind of what inspired you at that time, what inspired you in writing that song, how did it come together, and so on.
So this is a very clear answer to this one, because that one was actually the chorus of that, or the partial chorus of that song. Was actually a line was written by Kristen's dad, who is not my stepfather. Her mom was my stepmother, and he was a songwriter, and we used to spend a lot of time playing guitar. We sort of learned to play guitar with him up to a point. And he had a song. I don't know if he called it Not Too Soon then, but so the chorus started, it's not too soon. He said it's not too soon. The chorus is basically, comes from this song that he had written, and I just said, can I take that part and turn it into a different song? And at the time he said yes, and I said, and I'll credit you. And he to this day did not want me to put his name on it. And I don't know why, but when we were doing it together in his apartment, the three of us, I had this whole other layer of melody and and music. And it's very, that song is so literal. It's for me, you know, I know that it seems somewhat probably, you know, opaque to others, yep. but that is a night in my life that song is about. And the whole time we would be playing it, I would have this like, I'd be humming the alternate melody with the alternate sort of words. And so I just, years later, when we were making Ramona, I just resurrected that. Because there's another example of a song, a melody that won't leave you alone until you exercise it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I just love it. I also really love the drumming in that song too. I think that totally moves it forward.
David Narciso. Yeah,
so great. But how did you come up with that chorus, those sort of like, you know, the sort of wordless sounds? Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's brilliant, but I don't, you know, it's, where'd that come from?
It was just sort of Kristen and I, as she was working on her lead, and it was just one of those. It was just in, you know, in working on it together in the studio, she was just playing and I was just kind of goofing off and they blended together and turned into,
that's how the great songs come together, right?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Happy accidents.
Yeah.
Well, Tanya Donnelly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Tanya.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this
means
was
a lot to us.
Great.
Yeah.
So stay safe.
Yep.
Okay.
You too.
All right.
I know.
Yeah. We'll get through this.
Better days.
That's right.
Better
Absolutely.
Days.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's hope so.
Bye.
Once again, thanks very much, Tanya, for your time. Thanks for coming on our show.
Thanks for rocking the suburbs with us. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting thinking about, I think I had asked Tanya about, you know, were there plans to tour behind this that were kind of scuttled? And she was like, no, you know, we're all kind of at a certain place in our lives where they're raising families and, you know, have children and offspring to sort of work on and focus on. And it's cool to talk to artists, who have gotten to that point through their own success or hard work or whatever it is, where they're at a place where they can, you know, put that as part of a priority in their life still while doing all these other things. And, you know, to me, who can barely walk and chew gum at the same time, I think it's incredible that they do all these things and it fits in with all their other priorities and things that they're doing. So she's really an inspiring individual. Same with the Parkington sisters. They seem to be on a similar track.
Yeah. And how great are they, huh?
I know. Really good. I think a lot of people are going to really fall in love with that band and discover some of their other stuff.
For sure. Well, if any of our listeners would like to comment at all on the interview or Tanya Donnelly's work, you can call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Yep. Call that number. And from time to time, we do fan mail episodes and we'll play your message on the show. Or if you'd rather, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com, or you can comment on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram pages, accounts, what have you. All those are at Suburbs Pod. All right.
Yep.
Visit our website, suburbspod.com, buy our merch, which you'll find there.
Yeah.
And rate and review our show on the Apple Podcasts. All right. Do those things too. Help us out. Come on. Look at the quality content we are bringing you, people, right?
Seriously, people, come on.
Step it up here. All right, let's move on. We have planned another celebrity interview for tomorrow. I don't want to say who that is. You'll just have to tune in and find out, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be pretty exciting.
All right. So this is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Oh, there goes my dog.
Aww.
Shadow.
I'll see if I can.
I want to say hi.